Here's the 1-0. Swung on, there it goes. Deep left center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. But caught. At the wall. Caught by Tapia. Boy, I thought that was gone. So Stanton got close. He sent Tapia back to the wall to make the catch. And the Yankees come up just empty. That would have tied the game.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 101 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod, or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. We're really in the swing of things now, not only in Breaking Balls with episode 101, but we're in the season now. Leading up to this, it was just all, oh, we're so excited. Even our last episode was like the day before opening day. So now here we are, 2 weeks in.
Well, and you know, just a little behind the scenes info for you. We would have been here last week. We could not decide for the life of us whether to call this episode 101 or 101. It caused such an internal rift here at Breaking Balls headquarters that we just had to cancel the whole episode. But we're back. Emily won. We're episode 101, I guess. I'm happy to be here, I guess. I'm kidding. I'm super happy to be here, man. The Mets are awesome so far.
Yeah,
13
I mean, come
and
on.
5, baby. Let's go.
That is unreal. I even said to John right before we were recording, because usually anyone who's listened to the show, you know the rundown. We usually start with the Yankees first, and then we start.
John respectfully allows the Yankee rundown first. Yes, yes.
He does.
They all know the format.
Then we go into the Mets, but I literally said to John, and not even being a dick, I was like, you know what? I feel like we should start with the Mets because they fucking earned it. Like, if we don't start with the Mets now when they're 12-5, then when the fuck do we?
Oh, that is so condescending, but I'll take it. That's fine. All right, yeah, not a dick, I guess. But no, yeah, and you're 100% right, because it's like, hey, man.
I didn't even mean to be condescending, I swear.
Hey, man, we've seen the Mets in May. Let's do it now before it all goes south. Yeah, man, the Mets have come out hot. We won our first 5 series of the year, which has only happened a few times. It happened in 86, it happened in 15, and it happened in 2018. I know one of these is not like the other, but it's a good start, right?
Seriously, though, that's
yeah,
crazy.
Two World Series teams started that way, so we'll take it. Right now, we're up on the Cardinals. We won last night, which we'll get to that in a minute. That was a crazy win, but we're going for our 6th in a row, which I think would be a franchise record if we managed to get that.
What, 6th win in a row?
No, 6 series wins to start a season.
Oh.
No, we don't have that kind of streak going. But, I mean, hey, you win 2/3 of your games, you're going to have a damn good season, right?
Hell yeah.
So what's great about this team so far is they're making it happen from both sides of the ball. You know, very often with the Mets, it'll be like, oh, the starters have been amazing and, you know, the offense is just barely keeping up.
The and Mets they're are, there, too.
Yeah, right. The Mets are doing great on both sides. We lead the league in offensive WAR right now with 4.2 WAR so far this season. And we're in second place in the league in pitching WAR with 2.9. That's only 0.1 behind the Dodgers. I don't even know where to start. Like, everyone's been great. Really, the only weak part I could say is the bullpen. We're going to need a little bullpen help before the deadline. But to start the month of April like this, offensively and defensively, it's just, I don't know. As a Mets fan, it feels wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so cautiously like, oh, yeah, things are going well. Like, when is the other shoe going to drop? I'm waiting for it.
One thing that I've noticed watching the Mets, and you can probably speak to this even better than I can since you are, in fact, a Mets fan.
I've been called worse, but yes.
This sport, especially, like, any team can have a great run. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, even the fucking team that only wins 50 games in a season can have a stretch of 10 games where they are just 9-1 or whatever.
Right.
So success doesn't necessarily translate to fans as like feel good success and like sustainable success, where this feels sustainable. You know
right.
what I mean? Not just like some Mets April hot streak that we've seen in years past where they then win 80 games.
Right. Yeah. When they had that year, it was a couple of years ago where they went 11-1 to start. That had the true feeling of like, all right, when's this going to end? Because it's going to end. I even mentioned to you earlier, like I said, we're in the 6th right now against the Cardinals, up 2-0. In previous years, a 2-0 Mets lead almost felt like them being behind by a run. You know what I mean? Like, you're yeah. so sure it was gone. They're up by two, and it's like, we might not blow this. Like, it doesn't feel tentative. And as I say that, okay, he made the catch. Good. Sorry. I'm doing this while I'm watching the game. It's very complex over here at Breaking Balls HQ. But yeah, no, it just, it does. It has that sustainable feel because it's not coming from just a few guys. It feels like a full team effort. No matter who's pitching, you feel like we have a shot. No matter who's up at bat, no one has been truly awful to start the season. Yeah, I have not felt this good about a team since the latter half of 2015. And I don't think it's close. You know what I mean?
Because even the other night when they were in Arizona playing the Diamondbacks, Diaz blew the save. He gave up a game-tying home run in the ninth inning. And in years past, that would have been it. You know yep. what I mean? But they still managed to win the game. So, like, he still gets a blown save, but no harm, no foul to a certain extent because the Mets of 2022 are able to still fucking score some runs despite winning and then almost losing in the ninth inning.
And who would have believed that that was only an appetizer for what happened last night against the Cardinals? So that Diaz game was like, yeah, that's a game that the Mets usually lose. Yesterday against the Cardinals is a game the Mets always lose. Always. You're down by two in the ninth. Like, it's all over. Just for those... It's so funny. Like, as a Mets fan, I need to remind myself that these are things that happen to good teams. You know? The good teams are the teams that will come out on top and, like, you know, the other team makes the mistakes and makes the errors. And for so many years with the Mets, it was like, oh, if not for that, you know, that one bad play, that one error, we would have won. Now we have other teams making those errors against us. And it's just a totally different feeling. And while even sometimes it feels like, yeah, but it's like, you know, but if he didn't make that error, yeah, but he did. And it's things are swinging our way. And baseball is such a finicky game that you forget when you're bad for so many years that, like, that's one of the things that happens to good teams is shit just swings their way. Even if it doesn't feel like you necessarily, you know, earned a victory, it goes your way. That's what happens to good teams. And I'm still getting used to it and hoping that it is for real indeed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what this sport's all about. It's capitalizing on mistakes.
Yep.
That's what hitters do. Pitchers make a mistake. Hitters hit it. Fielders make a mistake. And the other team's ability to capitalize it or not really separates the herd. And not only were they 2-0, down 2-0 in the ninth, but there was two outs and Cana had two strikes on him. I think who was a pitcher? Genesis Cabrera, I believe.
Yes.
Like, he came so fucking close to closing that game out. And then it all unraveled so quickly. John and I literally were like, what just happened? What's happening right now?
I could not believe it. Yeah, and that wasn't just because the SNY broadcast was so messed up that so then Nimmo texts on the two-run home run and it's just like silence. And the ball flies over the wall. And then Gary comes back. Like, what is happening in the SNY? They're having some issues on the road.
It went right from that Big Time Bats commercial, a cut that short, yeah, and then Keith a Hernandez home run. Bat. It was so bizarre.
So, yeah, so things are looking up in Mets land right now. The other big piece of news with the Mets is we know DeGrom obviously got shut down towards the end of spring training. He wasn't able to make his last start. And everyone was waiting with bated breath to get the results of this MRI. The results were good, not great. You know, best case scenario would be he's able to start throwing right away. We didn't quite get that. But we did get significant healing in his, I don't remember the word, it's a shoulder, scapula, something like that. His shoulder. There was significant healing.
Oh, wait, no, that was a
See, this is what happens when we try and guess. It's his shoulder. I don't know.
Yeah,
but anyway, point being, they saw significant healing. They're going to do another scan in 3 weeks. He's able to start building up some, like, load resistance or whatever. Not quite throwing yet. So the optimistic view is getting him back maybe, like, the end of June-ish. And, hey, man, if we could tack that on top of how our starters have been, because Scherzer, not for nothing. I was lucky enough I got to go to that Mets doubleheader last week. Scherzer is so captivating to watch live. And I hadn't really fully appreciated it because he was always, you know, against the Mets and the Nationals and shit.
Less captivating.
Less captivating. When he's on your team and just watching him go, this dude carried a no-hitter into the sixth. I didn't even realize it. I was there in the stands and I'm just like watching him slack-jawed and he gives up a hit and everybody's applauding. I'm like, why are they? Oh my God, he had a no-hitter going. Like, it's wild. All this stuff I'm just so not used to and not expecting is now happening.
And he's even captivating on television. I mean, he's never been on any of my teams, unfortunately. But just watch. He's just such like a... And it's not even his eyes. Like, there's just something about him. He's so intense. And yes. Even when he's not pitching, they talk about him on the broadcast because he's right there, right next to Showalter and in his ear, and the two of them are talking about strategy and everything. And it's just like, this is the kind of like veteran presence, and that yes. term gets so overused and just has become so cheesy, but like that's what it is. It's a guy like Scherzer who is clearly all in on this team because this team has a shot to do something.
It does. And you know, I think it's that combination of Showalter and Scherzer coming in. And Scherzer even said that Buck Showalter reminds him of Jim Leland a lot, because remember, he started out with the Tigers. And that all bodes well to me, man. Like you could already just see the clubhouse is different. Like there's a no bullshit kind of thing going on. Like, come correct, come play the game, camaraderie. It feels different in the best possible way. And we were already excited for the season, but now I'm really excited for the season.
I am more excited for the season now. I'm almost glad that we didn't record last week, because, and it just went to show how fucking mercurial the sport is, that last week I couldn't have been down any further on the Yankees than I was. Fast forward to today, things are starting to look up. They're actually beating the Orioles. Well, at least they were when we first started recording. And
oh, actually, I have an update. Commercial break in progress, so...
Well, DJ Binchington just told me that it's now 10-8, and that is a little disconcerting.
10-8, who?
Yankees. They're still winning, oh, thank okay. God.
That's not so bad.
And it's uncharacteristic. I mean, they've had trouble with the Orioles in the last 2 years, which is really frustrating, and is the main reason that they had to play the fucking play-in game in Boston last year, is because of how shitty they played against the Orioles. They started the same way. They lost the first series to them. Tonight started out promising. Tony Rizzo had two home runs. Gallo finally checked in with a home run. But
Pause. He's Tony now? I'm asking. That's how familiar we are with Mr. Rizzo?
I mean, if...
Or are we just leaning into the Italian angle? I don't know where you're coming from on this.
If he only hit one home run tonight, I probably would have referred to him as Antony. But now that he hit two, it's officially Tony. We're on that basis now. The Yankees pitching has been... I mean, with the exception of Cole. Cole struggled the first few games. I mean, he blamed Billy Crystal. We got into all of that. And listen, I was not worried about Cole, and I'm glad that I stuck with that, because he's since locked it down. He had a great start on Sunday versus the Indians. And that was a landmark series, in my opinion.
So are we not going to have like a swear jar or something every time we call them the Indians?
Oh shit, that's right.
Don't you dare splice that out. You did it.
No, we're DJ Binchton, keep that in. The Guardians. I have to start trying to work into my vernacular just calling them Cleveland. Because I feel like I'm gonna call them
Indians.
That is the
safe way out, yeah.
Right? So they had a landmark series versus Cleveland, where
the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, the Cleveland Indians. They came to Yankee Stadium. The Yankees swept that series. Cole had a great start on Sunday to close out the sweep. And the reason why this was a landmark series is because last year, I wish I should have counted up, or I should try to by next episode. The Yankees could not fucking sweep a series. They would win the first two games, and then they would drop that third game, which made it feel like they didn't win the series, because you're now leaving on such a sour note. And they also... could not win fucking day games. And Cole, a lot of times, was pitching during the day. He would not get any offensive support, and it was a very frustrating pattern. So the fact that they just swept the series, Cole pitched well on a Sunday afternoon, I was like, is this it? Is the World Series back on? And I honestly think it might be.
Just takes one, right?
I wrote out a list. Like, I have three lists here, like a yay, an eh, and a yikes list of just like players on the Yankees, because I was like, I can't just sit here and try to write out stats. And the ones that you would think are on the yikes list, they're actually on the yay list. I was pretty down on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. I have to have a little bit of a mea culpa, which I'm sure is going to jinx him, but he's actually been pretty solid. I mean, he's exactly what you are hoping he's going to be. His defense has been there, but he's been swinging the bat a little bit. And if he can fucking hit 300, and I know batting average is not anything close to what it used to be, but for a player like Kiner-Falefa specifically, who he's never going to fucking be a power hitter. So like, I feel like it's okay to focus on batting average for someone like that, because you just want him to move the carousel, get on base, move guys around. And if he can continue to do that, then I think that the Yankees are, that's going to be like a key for the Yankees, is having guys like that check in.
I'm sorry. I just love the scientific approach of like, so good news. He's off the yikes list, finally. he even surpassed the ant list. He rocketed up to the top.
He's not alone there. I mean, Rizzo, Tony's there. DJ LeMahieu is looking like DJ LeMahieu of 2019-2020 era LeMahieu. And if that DJ's back, holy shit, everybody. That was also a huge hole in the lineup last year. Like, if he can continue to have a little bit of pop in his bat, and this is all happening despite the fucking de-juiced ball, which has been brutal so far.
De-juiced LeMahieu? I'll see myself out.
That was good. Who knows when MLB is going to mix in the juice balls? You know it's coming. I mean, they're trying to, like, get rid of that 3-2 outcomes hitting, but, like, it's not going to go away just because of the de-juiced balls.
Did you see that theory that, like, they had a stock of the de-juiced balls left over and they're trying to run through that before whatever the actual balls for this year are? I mean, nobody actually knows what's going on, but I heard somebody, that was their theory.
Which is hilarious to think about, like, as if MLB is like, we already paid for these balls. We have to use
right,
them.
Right, yeah. You know how short we are on money.
This just in, fresh off the news desk, Tony Rizzo just hit his third home run of the night. Judge also hit a home run. I mean, the Italian king. I was not too happy about his signing because I wanted Freeman. I wanted this, that one. I have to take this one on the chin. Tony, I'm glad you're back. Please keep hitting dingers. I said to John before we recorded that he's going to hit 40 this year, and I'm sticking by that number.
Okay, I'm now realizing that the secondary TV is frozen on the commercial break in progress screen, which is why I haven't seen any of this. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
The longest commercial of all time.
It is. I'm looking at it. I'm like, hey, those pixels aren't moving on the screen. Oh, come on.
The Yankees pitching has been lights out, even with Cole's struggles. I mean, their bullpen is just one of the best in the league. And I think it's time to start categorizing Nestor Cortes Jr. as a legit starter. Like, last year, it was all like, oh my God, what a, like, a magical run. Like, it was almost like Cinderella-esque because it was like, who the fuck is this guy? And he's pitching so well, and he's so quirky in the way that he delivers the pitch, where now he's carried that success over. And at what point do we have to respect this man and just stop having it be like a quirky storyline?
You know, it's funny. One of my best friends, Patrick, is a hardcore Red Sox fan. He's one of the biggest baseball fans I know. He's like our level. And I hung out with him this past weekend, and he's one of those Red Sox fans. He has no time for the Yankees, no patience for them, hates them all. I get it. You know, it's me and the Braves.
Right.
But I was kind of arguing with him, and I was like, no, man, I don't hate the Yankees. There's a lot of likable Yankees. And my main go-to was Cortes. I love watching that guy pitch. He's great. The way he introduces those, like, quirky little movements into his motion to fuck with guys, like, I don't know. He's just fun to watch.
He's been really great to watch. I mean, yeah. His FIP is under 2 right now, which is insane. And
which is the term for the area underneath his mustache between the lower lip, right?
It's not, but it should be. I mean, I'm going to petition for that.
Fielding independent mustache. Sorry, I need to stop. You go ahead.
Hixey has been great, too. It's been great to have him back. He's on paternity leave as we speak, but he'll be back, I'm sure, in a few days. Judge, of course, has just been Aaron Judge, unbelievable. And even though he's quote-unquote struggled for Judge, he's still by far the best hitter on the team, even statistically speaking right now.
I love all the people like, oh, well, you know, he's upset they didn't get the contract. I'm like, no, he's not.
No, like, he's not thinking about that at all. No. Well, does he think about it sometimes? I'm sure. But now at this point,
he's human, but yeah.
Maybe in like the first week, but now it's like they're in the season. He's put it behind him. This is specifically why players say they're not going to talk about this kind of stuff
right.
Or do negotiations in season because they want to focus. So I think that at this point, he's basically moved past it until the end of the year. Some guys on my yikes list. I mean, we have Higgy, who he sucks at the plate. He was our spring training hero, and my God, he did not carry that success over on any level whatsoever. He's even struggled a bit defensively. They picked up Jose Trevino.
I'm a little offended that I wasted my vocal cords on that, if I'm being perfectly honest with you.
To be honest with you, that is like the perfect spring training hero, in my opinion. Like, he was just a spring training hero. It started and ended there. Like, and now he's in the big leagues and come back down to earth.
Zero to hero, back to zero.
Johnny Loaisiga has struggled a little bit. I mean, a lot of the pitchers, I'm giving them a lot of latitude, especially the ones that have had past success like Cole or Loaisiga. Because
has anybody noticed yet that there's no Mets yikes list? I did.
Give it time. They had the short spring training. They're starting to get back in the groove now, so I'm not worried about any of those guys at all. Stanton has struggled a little bit. It's flown under the radar because he's had a few timely hits and because he always hits the ball so fucking hard that it doesn't look as ugly, his streaks, as sometimes other players do. And by other players, I mean Joseph Gallo, who is number one on my yikes list right now. Fortunately, he did hit his first home run of the season tonight, and he had his first RBI over the weekend. So I'm just an optimistic. I mean, I have no choice but to be an optimist. How can you be pessimistic on fucking April 26th? You know what I mean? Like, it's way too early to just be stuck in that gear, especially because the Yankees are fucking 10-6.
Oh, and a lot of people are in April.
Oh,
it's, I know. It's insane. Now, you know who notably did not make your Yankees yikes list? Carlos Beltran, who debuted on the Yes Network. A lot of Y alliteration today. But he had his debut on the Yes Network, and by all accounts, it went pretty well, if maybe a little casual, but I mean that in a good way.
I really enjoyed him. I mean, he's clearly very green on the mic. Like, he has no experience doing this. And in my opinion, that is endearing to me because he wasn't trying to be a certain way. Like, and not that all analysts are trying to be a certain way, but even, like, let's take A-Rod, for example. Can he have some good analysis? Sure. But he panders more often than not, like him talking about how important and how great bunts are. If he actually felt that way, he probably would have laid down a few bunts in his career, but instead he hit almost 700 home runs. So that sort of analysis is very phony to me, whereas Beltran was clearly just focusing on not embarrassing himself. So he was being totally sincere in his analysis and talking about if he were a player, what he would be thinking and what he did and what they do to prepare, yada, yada. And it was just really refreshing because so much analysis is just so canned, especially on even on major networks like Yes or SNY. Some of it can just be like a little too like, all right, we get it. You know, it's baseball.
Well, and when it's a former player, I think personally it's the difference between, it's two different ways to prep, right? You can prep by, oh God, I've never done this before. Let me listen to a bunch of other guys do it. And what do they do? And let me mimic them. Versus hopefully Beltran has realized it's like, well, no, they want me because I'm Carlos Beltran and I have this wealth of experience and knowledge to share and anecdotes and all this stuff. You know, versus like, hey, maybe it's a little less comfortable at first, like not knowing what to say. And I'm sure, you know, there's a, well, for lack of a different term, a comfort zone of having that those kind of canned responses like locked and loaded versus just be yourself. You know what I mean? Which is kind of, we've been through that on a much smaller scale with this podcast. We're just like, we try not to be like other people. We try to be ourselves. And that's a growing process. You know, that's, you don't start right out of the gate at 100 miles an hour. You know what I mean? You got to ramp up. And so I think he'll do just fine.
I think he will too. And it's really refreshing between he and Maben to have some players that played recently.
Yes.
I mean, David Cone is the gold standard for analysts. He was great. He's going to be great, I think, for his entire career as a broadcaster, no matter how far away he gets from his playing days. But guys like Paul O'Neill, who can be great. Paul is a great, like, personality. He's a good, like, third man on the mic. You know what I mean? He laughs at jokes or whatever. But his analysis is getting very stale because it's a much different game than it was when he played in his heyday fucking 30 years ago, almost 40 years ago. And no disrespect to people who that was also their heyday as a fan watching, but it's undeniable that the game is not how it was then. So how can you expect someone like Paul O'Neill to really be a David Cone, you know? Like,
right.
David Cone is a special type of analyst, and you can't expect older guys to all be that way. So you have to infuse some fresh blood.
Right. I mean, there's also even something to be said for when a guy is too good, he doesn't stay on your broadcast. You know, like a David Cone or like Ron Darling got scooped up by TBS. And I mean, the big one for Mets fans, we're still not over it, is Kevin Burkhart is now like the voice of football on Fox, I guess.
How did this happen?
I don't know. I mean, well, you know, even back in the day, he always had the voice. So it's like, all right, we're going to lose this guy. But but then you have like your Keith Hernandezes, who are great at what they do, but no other team wants Keith Hernandez to do that. You know what I mean? It's just the Mets. So we'll see how it goes for Beltran. I could see Beltran settling into that, just like perfect for the Yankees booth, you know, having both the experience as a Yankee and around the league and, you know, even the pseudo villain role to some fans because he's a bit of that foil with the, you know, his time with the Astros. And he just, there's a lot in the Beltran package that he brings to Yes. So I got a good feeling about it.
And it's actually funny that you mentioned his foray on the 2017 Astros, because Astros Nation was slightly disappointed today. The infamous Yankees letter was released and the contents were known to the world.
As in they were already known and we learned nothing new from the letter?
Exactly. It was shit that we already knew. We said this on the podcast weeks ago. People had been saying this for weeks, that it's nothing new. They got caught doing what they did. They were fined. The only new information on this letter was that they were fined $100,000, which was allocated to Hurricane Irma relief by MLB.
And you realize what this is, right? This is like the breaking balls curse in reverse, but it still sucks. It's like, oh, we got the news. It dropped on a Tuesday? Really? Yeah, but it's nothing. Okay. So moving on. No, not really. I mean, and you're right. Astros fans are down bad because they were so ready for this to be like, see, you guys too. And it's like, well, no, it's kind of basically what the Red Sox did, except before the Red Sox were told to knock it off. So it's kind of like, were they even really? I mean, sure, by current standards, you know, it would be illegal to do that. But like at the time, it wasn't really even against the rules. It was like exploiting a loophole, right?
That is exactly what it was. I mean, the incident for them was in 2015 and I believe a little bit in 2016. And what they were doing, because right before that in 2014 is when they introduced replay to MLB. So then teams started using the replay room because there was no rule that explicitly said teams were not allowed to use the replay room in order to decode signs. The rules were all focused on how the information gained was relayed to the team. You couldn't do that electronically, basically trying to avoid what the Astros ended up doing, which was real-time relay of signs to the hitter in the box. So MLB, after this happened, and other teams were doing it too, of course, just like they have been for years, they closed that loophole in September of 2017 and March of 2018. That was when they expressly stated, you cannot use any of this equipment to decode signs, because how teams were getting around it was they just simply moved the replay room into the clubhouse. So it was right by the dugout. So then they didn't have to use the replay room phone illegally, which is essentially what the Yankees got popped for, because Larry Rothschild, the pitching coach at the time, he was using the replay room phone to ask them about like any signs or whatever that they were seeing. So that's what they got fined for. So at the time, sign stealing wasn't illegal, but then MLB kind of caught up when they saw what was going on and then closed those loopholes as best they could. And then the Red Sox and Astros got caught after that had already happened. That's why they got the harsher punishments, because MLB literally was like, if you get caught doing any of this stuff now, the punishments are going to be harsher and you're going to lose draft picks. So then they fucking did. And I mean, sucks for them that they did it in 2017 and 2018 instead of 2015. I mean, at least you guys won World Series. So like,
right.
Who gives a shit? The Yankees cheated just to get into the wild card game and lose. So.
Right. And you know, I'm actually going to go to bat for the Yankees here for a second. There are a lot of people on their moral high horse about this. Like, oh, you knew it was wrong. Bah, 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 bah. Two things. First off, whatever nuances you want to throw out here, it comes down to the Astros cheating resulted in them knowing on a pitch-by-pitch basis what was coming. The Yankees and Red Sox did not do that. So that to me right there is like, it's a lower level of cheating. It's still cheating, sure, but it's a lower level. And the other big thing is like, it's so easy to judge in retrospect, but the reality is that, you know, technology is ever evolving really at an exponential pace at this point in history. And the way it works is not that you magically predict how technology is going to be used and potentially exploited, and you make those laws ahead of time to prevent that. That's just not the reality of the world. You know, the technology gets out there, people figure out how to use it, they figure out the gray areas, and like we talk about loopholes to exploit, and then the law catches up with the technology. And baseball is no different in this case, you know, talking about the replay room. So yeah, it's real convenient. And I know too, let's be real, it's definitely because it's the Yankees, that's a lot of this reaction, both because, I mean, A, again, they're the Yankees. They have a big, loud fan base. And they were the ones, one of the other main teams on the other side of the Astros in 2017. So it's all kind of right there for, like, people were really salivating at, like, oh, the Yankees are going down. And then when it's nothing, it's like, well, you might hate the Yankees. That's okay. But, like, that doesn't suddenly mean that what they did was, like, evil and wrong and all, you know, conniving and all this shit.
there were a lot of Red Sox fans and Astros fans that were being like purposely obtuse about it too. And the perfect analogy that I thought of, especially for you Red Sox fans out there, back in January and leading up to the Hall of Fame vote, I had Red Sox fans painstakingly explaining to me why it was different that David Ortiz used PEDs before MLB started enforcing their PED rules and started
testing. Because he was
testing.
Cool about it.
Right. Because he stopped. He did it before they did that. But A-Rod continued. And that's why A-Rod's legacy is tarnished. And David Ortiz, no one talks about it. And he's a Hall of Famer. And everyone was okay with that. That's what this is. The Yankees did this thing before it was expressly stated to be illegal in MLB. And then the Red Sox and the Astros did it, but after it was then illegal.
I just love so much how both fan bases hate that analogy. So basically what we're getting at is David Ortiz is the Yankees and A-Rod is the Red Sox. You understand, right? That makes sense.
Everyone's just vomiting. Ugh.
Oh my God.
What happened?
Pete Alonso just got hit in the head.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he got right up though.
Oh my God, dude, that's the second time this year.
Whew.
That was actually perfect timing because I literally spliced and said to John, how do I end this after we did that vomit thing? And that is the perfect way to just change that subject right away. Did it hit him in the ear flap?
They got to go back and show the replay, but it hit him clean and like the helmet popped off when it hit
Holy
him.
Holy shit.
So it hit him square, but he got right up and ran to first and then Buck sprinted out of the dugout. The bullpens are doing the thing where like they're not running in, but they're just like on the warning track with their hands in their hoodie pockets, just like looking like, we coming out? Is this a fight? Yeah? No? Yeah? No?
On the warning track. They're like, this is a warning. That's why we're standing here. Right.
You see the track that we're standing on, don't you?
And on that note, let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Dan.
Hi, this is Dan from Ashburn, Virginia. I'd like to talk about Joey Gallo. With the departure of Gary Sanchez, I suspect that it was going to be a challenging year for Gallo. And based on Yankees Twitter, he's lucky that Gleyber Torres remains available to absorb some of the abuse that he would otherwise be receiving. There was a moment in last Friday's awful 2-1 loss to the Orioles that's kind of haunted me. In the top of the 11th, right after Rizzo got hit by the grounder to short and Donaldson struck out, Gallo came up with Stanton on first and two out. Like most people, I expect another strikeout or maybe a walk. I didn't even want to hope for a ball in play. As an old person, there's nothing I enjoy more than watching the players run around and do shit. Unfortunately, it's something that rarely happens now that we know from statistical analysis is entirely unnecessary to the game of baseball. So Gallo finally hits one in play, and ironically, the ball goes approximately 3 inches, which had to be slightly humiliating for the Giant with the nearly vertical swing plane. So all in all, it was the worst moment in the worst game of the season. And it was a kind of feeling I haven't experienced since the Stump Merrill era. My question to you is, does he come back from this, or will he continue to spiral downward until they trade him for Mike Tauchman? Thanks. Big fan.
Dan, I will say that I actually love and appreciate your optimism that last Friday's game was the worst game of the season. And I hope to God that that is the truth, because it was only game like 7 or whatever. Gallo has been struggling. I mean, he is your quintessential 3 true outcomes hitter. Unfortunately, when the season starts with the worst outcome of those 3 being basically the only outcome, it is absolutely brutal from a winning standpoint and even an entertainment standpoint. I do think that he's going to bounce back. I mean, he's already been bouncing back the last few games. I know that your voicemail was from a little over a week ago, because it was actually for last week's episode. So he's starting to get there. I think he's going to be okay. I really do. I don't think he's going to be better than the player he's been his entire career, which isn't a bad thing. But if I were you, I wouldn't expect him to suddenly become an Aaron Judge where he's going to hit, you know, 290 and slug 570. He's going to hit 200, hopefully. And he's going to slug 500, though. And I really do believe that that's what the case is going to be by the end of the season. Dan, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Tom.
Hey, guys. It's Tom in Quincy. I called a couple times, down here in Massachusetts. I'm not impressed with the Sox performance so far. I do feel that the only saving grace is that the rest of the league is all batting, playing similar to the 500 level. the only teams that truly suck are Texas and the Royals and the Orioles. So I feel it's anyone's game at this point. Not my favorite time, first couple weeks of the year. Not digging it so far. They got to step it up.
Tom, this season is going to be a fucking dogfight in this division. I mean, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it's one of those like a National League Central situation where for so many years, like the Cardinals were good, the Brewers were good, the Cubs were good. So like they would finish with like barely over 90 wins. And it's because they were just all hamstringing each other all season because they were some of the best teams in the league. Where that's going to happen in this division. Like I would be shocked if any one team runs away with it. So it's just going to be a on the edge of our seat, stressful as fuck season, which is just like every other season in the past. So why change now?
I got to be honest. I don't really give a shit how the Sox play either way. Just whatever they do, I just want it to be enough to compel Tom to call in because I don't think there's a better accent to hear people talk about baseball in than that thick Massachusetts accent.
Tom, thank you so much for calling. Our next call is from Jerry.
Hey, MC Juzzit. Hello, everybody. Jerry Drop Mickey here again. Because I got nothing. I noticed that Beltran, Carlos, was able to keep his beard doing a Yankee broadcast. I think that's great. We fans of the Yankees also get to keep our beards. As far as these robo balls and strikes, I keep going back and forth on this because I love it when players and managers entertain us with questioning calls. But I keep going back and forth. I don't know if I'm ready to go robo or not. Okay. Hope you enjoy everything. Bye.
I'm going back and forth on it too, Jerry, because a lot of the time I'm ready for it. I want the robo umps. I want a accurate strike zone. It's not supposed to be something that's up for as much interpretation as it tends to be. Not to mention, it's a very difficult job. I mean, umps are essentially trying to do the same thing that hitters are doing, and we acknowledge hitters as being some of the best of all time if they are only successful 3 out of every 10 at-bats. So with that being said, I would not totally hate a robo-ump, but I agree with you in the sense that the game is struggling as it evolves and has a lot of growing pains due to the fact that the most efficient ways to win are not as entertaining from a fan perspective, and I think removing some of that human element, even though it can be frustrating as fuck when you're on the losing end of it, will hurt the game maybe more than missed calls. But I'm not sure if I'm in that 100%, but I can totally understand why you wouldn't be 100% in on robo-umps.
I'll just say that we had one of the most compelling cases made for robo-umps this past week, but I can't talk about it yet because we're saving it for the final segment. Not completely off topic, just a little, right on brand for me. What I'm most interested to see if and when, probably when, we get robo-umps is, you know, part of that human element that we're talking about is when an ump messes up a call, a player will take his frustrations out on the ump. Even when the ump gets the call right, the player will often kind of argue like, oh, disagree, like, oh, I don't think so. When we get the robo-umps and there's no more in between, there's going to be some anger that the players are either going to have to bottle up or it's just going to be really funny watching them argue with the wall. But the ump's like, I didn't even make that call. That was relayed to me in New York. They told me it was a strike. What do you want me to do? I'm excited for that kind of weird human interaction.
It just becomes like they wheel out like an ultimate robot boxer from Futurama and they're like, fine, you want to fight the ump? Fight this guy. Jerry, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Bubak.
What's up, my beautiful baseball people? I just got two things real quick tonight. I want to admit that I'm a petty Yankees fan. Oh, we are. We all are. John, not so much. You're a petty Mets fan. But I just want to admit I'm a petty Yanks fan, and that's going to happen throughout the year. I'm going to bitch about it. You heard it last year. You heard my stuff last year. My second thing is, I don't know how to admit this. This is a tough one. My daughters listen to the Sing 2 soundtrack. They watch the movie Sing 2 in the vehicle all the time. And one of the main songs on the movie is a U2 song. and Bono plays this character, and that song is stuck in my fucking head all fucking day. And I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And I still haven't found. I gotta go, guys. That's just disgusting.
You know, a lot of times we'll get people calling in saying they have nothing to talk about, and we're encouraging. It's like, hey, don't worry about it. You know, if you got nothing to say, call in. I disagree with that idea here. If you truly have nothing to call in about except to get a goddamn U2 song stuck in my head, I'll talk to you next week, Bubak.
And Bubak, I can commiserate. I am also a petty Yankee fan, and you should keep that in mind because I'm going to be taking this pettiness out on you at some point because I'm going to have this fucking song stuck in my head at least through the weekend. For the amount of times I have to listen to this episode, God help DJ Benchington when he has to edit and listen to that over and over again later.
I feel like I'm dying inside.
Oh, guess what, Em? I found what I'm looking for Bubak to go back in time and never make that phone call. Also, yes, I'm a petty Mets fan. Thank you for acknowledging me.
Bubak, we begrudgingly thank you for your call. Just kidding, buddy. Our next call is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. So, it's good to have baseball back, of course. I'm excited to watch the Mets game tonight. They had an off day yesterday. They didn't play yesterday. The Yankees letter came out today, and to the surprise of nobody, it was basically nothing that we didn't already know, and also nothing more than like what the Red Sox did and got a slap on the wrist for. So I'm sure there's a lot of disappointment coming out of Houston today. Also, Tommy Pham might be an idiot because he wants to fight Luke Voit. He's like, oh, I know a gym owner in San Diego. I want to fight Luke Voit. Luke Voit probably has about 50 pounds of muscle on him. And also Pham got stabbed outside of a strip club in San Diego last year. So I don't know what he's dreaming of. He thinks fighting anyone's a good idea. Congratulations to the Nationals on being probably the first MLB team to cause a national security scare by somehow not communicating with the Capitol that they were going to be flying planes in a no-fly zone to have people parachute onto the field on opening day. Whatever, that franchise is a disaster.
I didn't even see the story of Tommy Pham wanting to fight Luke Voit. I looked it up and saw that it was because of that slide that Voit had into a Tyler Stevenson last week. And Tommy Pham, I mean, I'm not surprised. He seems a little crazy, you know what I mean? He seems like the guy that is just super horny to fight at all times.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of baseball fights I would pay to see. Like, it would be bad for the sport. Like, I don't really want it, but like, I kind of do, like, low-key. I got it, Quinn. I laughed so hard when you said the game didn't happen last night. That was really funny, man. I did see that story about the Nationals. And, hey, man, you're on this great streak of calling in and bashing the Nationals. Now, if I can take a call between bashing the Nationals or singing U2, I'm going to take bashing the Nationals every time, Quinn. You are above Bubak in my personal rankings right now, and I appreciate you, buddy.
And you also provided us with almost too perfect of a segue, because as you all know, we like to do a top segment of some kind at the end of the show. It's a long season. We have a lot of episodes lined up, so we wanted to mix it up a little bit this year. Because this episode, episode 101, landed perfectly at the end of the month, we decided that from now on, we're going to do a Mr. Blank. So this month would be a Mr. April. And conversely, like any good superhero has their... I almost said evil twin. I obviously don't know shit about superheroes.
I'll take over from here. So since Superman has his Bizarro... Okay, thank you. Mr. April is going to have his April Bozo. Now, Tommy Pham, you're right, Quinn. Tommy Pham was an idiot, but he wasn't quite a bozo. We got some lined up for you, though. I'll kick it off. So, Mr. April, for me, is Kyle Schwarber. And I can't believe him giving it to a Philly. But my God, you remember during Jerry's voicemail, I said there was some case to be made for robo-umps, and I couldn't mention it yet. Here we go. Kyle Schwarber was all of us. We were all Kyle Schwarber the other night. So, frickin' Angel Hernandez was behind the plate. Bad start. I know, right? It gets worse. So Angel Hernandez is behind the plate. It's Philly versus Milwaukee. And let me just pull it up here. So you got, if you don't follow umpire scorecards already, you're doing yourself a disservice. And this one was a gem. So Milwaukee won 1-0. Angel Hernandez gave 0.77 runs for Milwaukee in a one-run game. Not a good look. His called strike accuracy was 77%. The league average is 88, which itself is not great. But my God, and you look at this spread, just I got to encourage you, just look it up online, umpire scorecards. His strike zone, it's like two strike zones. It legitimately is. Like, it's spread out all the way in three different directions. And you see particularly that pitch that Schwarber flipped out on. It was a 3-2 count. He called a ball a strike. And this thing is not even touching the black, like not even close. It's 6 inches off the plate easily. And I got to give Schwarber credit because he blew up on Angel Hernandez and even kind of went to bat for the Brewers. He was saying, like, on both sides all night, it's horseshit. It was beautiful. Somebody needed to do it. And we know Angel Hernandez doesn't give a shit, but somebody venting our frustrations for us was great. And for that, Kyle Schwarber gets my Mr. April 2022.
My Mr. April is not even a player. There's something special brewing in Oakland. No, it's not the baseball team. No, it's not the possibility of moving the stadium. Right now, there are 30 to 40 feral cats running rampant in Oakland Coliseum, and they are my Mr. April because that team has had 3,000 people at games. They have had the lowest attendance in, I don't want to say MLB history, but certainly of the last few years. It's really dismal. The cats are injecting some life into that stadium. I mean, I just love picturing them like taking over portions of the stadium. Like, no, we can't sell tickets over there tonight because the cats have moved in and they're here to stay.
It's the 7 feline army. We don't control them at all, but they take over an entire section of the outfield. With the number of A's fans that are going to games, it's literally like if you had a cat for every like family of 4 or 5. That's like what's loose in the stadium right now. Also, I'm disappointed in you. Meowster April. Come on, you're the cat.
Meowster. Oh my God, I totally blew that one.
Unbelievable. Well, listen, you didn't blow it that badly because you're not my April Bozo.
I came close though.
You were in competition there for a minute. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. All right, so April Bozo. We talked about Schwarber and his justified rage at the April Bozo of the month, Angel Hernandez. This dude deserves it. I don't even have anything fresh to say. I went over how bad he was. Here's one. So did you see that video of him driving away fan screaming at him, and Hernandez is just like smiling vacantly behind the wheel of his truck? Oh my God. Hernandez knows that he's bad at his job. I mean, this is the guy that like wasn't allowed to do the World Series. And when they asked why, the league was like, well, because you're bad at your job. And just went back to it. No problem. So yeah, Angel Hernandez is the strongest case that we have right now for robo-umps. The guy is just a clown. He's terrible at his job and he doesn't care. He's unapologetic about it. And because of that, I feel like Bozo is not strong enough a word, but it's the strongest award that we have going right now, starting this week, I guess. So he is the April Bozo for 2022. Angel Hernandez, ladies and gentlemen.
My April Bozo is kind of split because I originally had written down Guardians outfielder Miles Straw, because this past weekend at Yankee Stadium, he let Yankee fans get in his head. He, at one point, ran up to the left field wall, climbed up the fence, and was yelling at a fan, "Hit me, motherfucker! Hit me, motherfucker!" The fan didn't hit him. It was very funny, I'm not gonna lie, and it was clear that the outfield was shook for the Guardians because they made a few mistakes the next day, and it was surprising. Straw isn't brand new to the league, so it's like, bro, you gotta tune it out. And the portion of that award that's being shared is with the Yankee fans that after that game started throwing bottles and shit onto the field. So they are also April Bozos of the month, because don't fucking do that. Don't throw shit. I don't care how drunk you are. We've all been fucking wasted at games. I've never once been like, let me throw this at the field. Like, the idea that anyone thought that that was funny or a good idea is just really lame. And I feel the same way about Miles Straw thinking it was funny or a good idea to climb up on that fence and yell in the fan's face. I get that someone may have said something nasty about Stephen Kwan, who had just been injured. But, bro, you're going to have a tough fucking career if you're letting fans who are just yelling stupid, dumb shit in your ear and it's getting you that riled up that you're turning around and challenging them to a fight. Fight Tommy Pham. He's ready to fight. Right.
How do players not realize at this point that the best way is just to ignore the fans? If they're being annoying, they're being obnoxious, just ignore them because all they want is you to respond. They want that attention. And I should also add, we should point out the one guy in that crowd who was not a bozo. In fact, he was a runner-up for my Mr. April. The guy, I'm kidding. The guy who was on that video where you see Miles Straws come up, there was some fan in the background. I don't know if he was trying to defuse it or what, just going, I'm from Cleveland. I'm from Cleveland.
Try and defuse it from the 15th row.
As if Straw just isn't seeing red at that point. Oh, wait. You're the guy that's saying he's from Cleveland? All right, you're cool. You! Fight me, bro!
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are awesome. And, of course, our callers. We had some new callers this week. Keep it coming. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ, B-I-N-G-I-N-G-T-O-N. And we will catch you guys next week.